The Outspoken Cyclist podcast is supported by the Dodd Camera Company. An Ohio institution in photography for over 100 years, Dodd Camera has stayed right in step with the newest in digital cameras and accessories, as well as offering services such as photo restoration and large format printing. Dodd Camera stores are located in Cleveland, Dayton, Cincinnati, Chicago, and now Columbus in the Oak Creek Shopping Center on Cameron Avenue. If you don't have one in your town, you can find them online at doddcamera.com. At Dodd Camera, the focus is on you. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
Hello and welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Lees, along with Tim McKenna.
Hi, Diane. How are you today?
Freezing.
Of course. It's only, what, zero?
Zero or minus something. Well, with the wind chill, heaven only knows what it is. It is so cold here. But happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Do you know what I want for Valentine's Day?
Warmer weather.
That would be nice, but barring that, I think I want Radiothon pledges.
I think that's a wonderful gift.
It's your gift to us as a listener, and it's our gift to the station. This is our last opportunity to ask you, our listeners, for your help. You still have time to get your pledge in to support the Outspoken Cyclist and WJCU Radio. The online pledge form is going to stay open until noon next Wednesday, February 18th. You can go to WJCU.org, click on the Pledge Online button, and this nifty little simple form pops up. I mean, it couldn't be any more straightforward.
It's so simple.
Yes.
I know you're listening right now. You're on your trainer and you're pedaling away. You can actually just take out your iPad or your Android or laptop or whatever, and you can do it while you're pedaling.
Very true. Very true. You can also give Tim or me a call. We are going to be in the studio until 6:30 Eastern time, 216-397-4438. That's this evening. We will be happy to take your pledge over the phone. I want to thank those who have already pledged. Their support is just wonderful. It's been generous. Every dollar is very much appreciated. We are not frivolous here at WJCU. We will use your donation wisely. All the money we raise for this one short period of time each year is used to make our facilities better, including equipment, software, and most recently, we have a brand new app so that you can get WJCU on your mobile. It's an app for Android and iPhone. It takes literally under 10 seconds to download. Voila, you have WJCU right there at your fingertips all the time, because you probably have your phone right there at your fingertips all the time.
Right. I know they listen to us all the time.
Of course they do. Of course they do. But even if you listen to the Outspoken Cyclist via podcast, this show would not be possible without the state-of-the-art studios at WJCU and the servers that give our podcasts a reliable 24/7 home. So even if you go to iTunes, I don't know if you know this, when you subscribe, iTunes doesn't have the podcast. They send you out to where the server is.
They just bounce it over and pick it up from...
So please, take a few moments to go to your computer, type in WJCU.org, open the online pledge form, and help support some of the best programming on the radio today.
Absolutely. And you're also supporting, besides us, you're supporting all the other shows and the great music that you get also.
You know, it's true. WJCU has some of the best shows and music on the radio today. And I think not just in Northeast Ohio. I mean, now that you can get it by app, you can hear some really good new music. You can get old music. You can get poetry. You can get a lot of things at WJCU that you can't find. You get a lot of ethnic shows. Just some really cool stuff goes on here at WJCU. You want to talk bicycling?
I'd love to.
Let's talk bicycling. So on our show this week, I've invited a brand new women's cycling team along with their sponsor to join me in the studio. In a recent press release, VeloFem Litzler wrote, VeloFem announces the establishment of VeloFem Litzler, an experienced and talented team of 8 elite female cyclists from the Northeast Ohio area. It is the mission of VeloFem to grow the community and sport of women's cycling through participation in local, regional, and national competitions, events, clinics, and mentoring programs. So as you know, if you've listened to many of our past shows, women are still running into a lot of obstacles as they bump up against the men's side of professional cycling. Yet, women's cycling is beginning to reach that tipping point of popularity that I think is going to push it onto the worldwide stage. We will talk with Laura Webb, Sally Price, my friend Jane Geis, and sponsor Matt Litzler to learn more about the team, their goals, and how it all came together. Then, after some news and a break, we're going to check in with our friend Lee Donovan, Miss I Choose Bikes, in what was the best ever women's event at Ray's Mountain Bike Park here in Cleveland. Lee hosted over 200 women in clinics last weekend and is going to fill us in on what they accomplished and what is coming up for the 2015 season. I tried to talk to her last weekend, and she didn't have any voice. She yelled so much for the weekend, so we rescheduled it for this weekend. Let's turn our attention to my in-studio guests, Team VeloFem Litzler. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. I'd like to start by introducing each of you to our listeners. Let's begin with you, Jane Geis, my friend Jane.
I'm Jane. I am. And I guess you asked for a little history of the of the racing kind of thing. I started racing when I was 54. I am now 61. And so I've raced with a couple of teams, and I've raced with Laura quite a bit. And last year we started scratching our heads and going, why are all the women all spread out on different teams? And we thought it might be a really, really fun concept to try and put us all under the same umbrella.
Do you have a role within the team, or has that not been established yet?
We have roles established.
Well, I know you, Jane. Everything is scheduled, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
We call you SQ for a reason.
Schedule queen. Yeah, well, we have a board, and within the board we have certain roles. I am temporarily treasurer, which is really pretty scary because I'm not very good with numbers. But I am really mostly interested, and I see a big role with our ambassador-level members, who are members who are interested in learning to race, perhaps, but mostly want to improve their cycling skills and go on group rides and learn what it means to race and be a part of a team. So these would be people coming in without a ton of experience. So I thought it would be fun to work with these women a lot, since I may not be racing at all this summer due to an injury. So that's sort of where I am with this right now.
And Laura, tell us who you are and how you're involved in the team and how long you've been riding.
My name is Laura Webb. I am involved with the team on a couple different levels. I would say my main role is on the leadership team as executive officer. Although I'd like to say that all members of the leadership team, there's 6 of us, we all kind of play a main role in leadership. So I'm not taking that all on myself.
Do you have a specific discipline in which you're interested?
I haven't narrowed that down yet.
Okay.
Road, crits, cyclocross. I love mountain biking, but I haven't really started racing in that yet.
Okay. And Sally is joining us from her home in Hudson, Ohio. Hi, Sally.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, I started racing, I don't even want to tell you how long ago, and I can't always remember. It's like birthdays. I think about 17 years ago when I was in grad school. So I started actually in triathlons and sort of just ventured over to more so the cycling discipline after I had my kids. So that's kind of how it evolved. But in terms of the team, I've raced with these gals, not on the same team, but with them. And when it's local, it's kind of like you're with each other, but not. So I also had helped put together teams in the past. I had our own women's team before, and I think I was pulled into this picture to really, you know, try to shed what experience I had in that whole process and just ride with a great group of women. And like Jane said, you know, instead of being shotgunned, pull together so that we can do some bigger events and also collaborate on just the awareness of the sport and you know, it's we all have, you know, an interest to grow the sport and develop, you know, an ambassador type program. But being separate and without the, you know, literally the muscles behind it with, you know, spreading out the workload, it's not really possible.
That makes sense to me. Well, we are going to end the introductions with the person who is really making this team possible in an important way, Matt Litzler. Matt and I have known each other for a long time. We can't figure out how long, but that's okay. Tell us a little bit about you, your history, and what it is that made you come on board to say, I think I want to sponsor a women's cycling team.
Thanks, Diane. I don't know that I would say that I'm a driving force. I think I was in the right place at the right time to help out with the team. But, you know, I got into cycling after seeing the movie Breaking Away in, like, 1979, went to Indiana, and became heavily involved in Little 500. In 1988, I was part of the group that started the first women's race. It was an all-male event. They're going to run the 65th. The edition of that race this year, and in 1988 we started a group of us started the women's version of the race, which has been extremely successful there at Indiana. And so I've ridden and raced over the years and just really have always liked involvement in the sport. And about 7 years ago I started to sponsor or helped pay for some coaching on the Spin team, which has now morphed into the Spin Litzler Automation team. And really started paying for the coaching for some junior cyclists, a couple of whom have gone on to scholarships at university and have continued to race and all that. And I'm also involved in the Cleveland Velodrome. I really raised a great portion of the money and really have been involved in that from the get-go. So I got wind of VeloFem, or what was – I didn't know it was VeloFem at the time – and both Jane and Laura raced for Spin Litzler Automation last year and knew of them and had met them a little bit. And at the Cleveland Velodrome cyclocross race, I had gotten wind that there was this new team. And I went up to Laura and I said, I heard you're maybe starting this new team and I'd be interested in helping. The contacts went back and forth over the fall, and then really I think it was New Year's Day, and Sally and I worked out the details over the phone on New Year's Day, and that's how I got on board.
So I'm going to stick with you for a second here, Matt, because we've talked a lot about the lack of sponsorship for women's cycling throughout the world, not just here in the U.S. and certainly not here in Ohio. Was it your choice to sponsor a women's team specifically as opposed to a men's team?
In this case, yes. I thought this was the right thing to do. And like I said, I was in the right place at the right time for it. In the past, the sponsorship has just been that I've done has just been because of a love for cycling and the ability to pass some benefit on to other people, to other cyclists. In this case, I thought it was the right thing to do. And, you know, when you look at sports in the United States in a very broad term, you know, internationally, look at the success U.S. women have had worldwide, going back to Connie Carpenter and Connie Pariskin-Young and Rebecca Twigg, Juliana Furtado, on and on and on, versus the success the men have had. And you also look at, like, let's say women's soccer. The women's U.S. women's soccer team is phenomenal. The men's team is not. And if you go on a group ride, and we've all gone on group rides, and there's not that many women in a group ride, and it can be intimidating. I think the description that Sally and Laura had given me, and as well as one of the other teammates, Annika, of what this was trying to be, I felt I was in a position to help and thought that was the right thing to do.
Okay, well, nobody's complaining about that. We're pretty happy. So I want to remind our listeners, we're speaking with three members of the VeloFem Litzler team out of Ohio. We are speaking with Matt Litzler, who is the team sponsor. And I want to know a little bit about the structure of the team. Laura, you have eight women on the team. Do you already have a race schedule for 2015? And do you know some of the things you'll be tasking each of the women to do?
At this point, the team will be focused across the many disciplines of cycling, more specifically road, crit, track, and cyclocross. As a team, we will be focusing on holding beginner clinics for track at the Cleveland Velodrome, beginner clinics for cyclocross, and we will also be holding track races and cyclocross races in the fall. We're trying to involve each team member on the leadership team in different roles as a support to VeloFemme and its board to make it more sustainable.
Are you going to be adding more women to the team?
Since our inception, we have gone from 6 to 12. Right now, we have 8 members on our core race team. We have 1 applying, and we have 4 members on our ambassador team.
Sally, I want you to tell me a little bit about your cyclocross history, because I know that even though you were a triathlete, you actually raced cyclocross last fall. Will you be working mainly with cyclocross and cyclocross riders?
I would love to do that. I love cyclocross. It's really a new discipline for me in the last few years. And I think racing so long, you kind of dabble into new pieces that you want to get into. I, again, want to give back to this sport, and I have a lot to learn in cyclocross yet, but I love to share what I know about every discipline. I will definitely be doing cyclocross again. It's just an interesting, fun, high energy, never the same race, never. Rain, snow, mud, dry, heat, cold, you know, it's fun. So, yes, I will be doing cyclocross again, and that's probably an area that I will focus my attention on.
Okay, Jane, I really would like to know what you're going to be planning to do if you can get back on the bike this year. I know you've been injured, and it's been a rough year for you, but you're so driven to do so many things, and you've already done so many wonderful things in cycling. What do you see as a goal for you this year, personally and for the team?
Well, I think if I can get on the bike and get fit, I'm really excited about learning to ride as a team and how one team member sacrifices for other team members. I would love to lead out sprints if I'm good enough to do that. I'm a pretty good time trialist, so I could see myself setting a hard pace and, you know, maybe having people drop off the back to give Sally or somebody else a shot at, you know, winning a race. I think the team tactics would be fascinating. So that would be exciting for me to get back on my bike and be able to do all that for sure.
Is there a coach for the team?
Yes, we have a team coach. His name is Sean Gilbert.
Very cool. Are there going to be other sponsors, like equipment sponsors, food sponsors, you know, kit sponsors, that kind of thing? This is not an inexpensive endeavor.
We have another sponsor. It's Sports Legs out of Chagrin Falls.
Our buddy
Chief Holmes.
Carl. Well, good for you.
Yes.
He's awesome.
Yes, and he's very excited about this. He was on board almost instantly.
Yeah, I'll bet he would be. Yeah,
yeah.
He'd be a great sponsor.
Yeah.
That's good. So are you looking for more sponsors?
We would love more sponsors.
Well, and we do have more sponsors.
And we do.
We have Bike Authority. We have Felt, SRAM, Zip through the support of Dick Brink.
Ken Kanabe with Brown and Zoller.
Okay, so the team is fairly ready to go for spring. So my last question is about bringing young women into the sport, young girls. As women who have all been racing and who are familiar with bike racing, do you have a program or are you going to develop a program to bring youngsters in? And do you think that'll happen soon?
Oh, I think we would love to do that. I think that would be very, very exciting. And we do have some youngsters that we're thinking about. You know, it's like anything else, it evolves. I think we have to get ourselves on the map, be seen out the races, be legitimate, have some, you know, depth and good performance and some sponsorship. And I think we will see some youngsters coming along. I think that would be a nice long-term goal for us.
I like that idea. Matt has something to say. Matt. Go for it.
So as far as juniors and young girls specifically, I've got 3 kids and I've coached the boys in baseball and basketball and all that. But I've spent a lot of time the last 6 or 7 years coaching my daughter and all her friends in soccer mainly. And the joy that I get from seeing those little girls who 1 minute are, you know, silly and dressing up and the next minute you know, just sacrificing and crashing into one another and the intensity, I think that we can, if we can transfer some of that intimidation of cycling with its wheels and clips and pedals and brakes, and there's a lot going on, you know, especially if we can transfer that, you know, because I think, and this is all anecdotal, that most women who come into cycling come in later in life, after college or something like that. If we could just get, you know, a handful of them earlier, I think we could really do some really great things for these younger girls.
Don't you think that parents need to be part of this too? Sally, I know you have youngsters. They're boys though, right?
No, I have a girl and a boy.
Oh, okay. They're fraternal twins. Does your little girl look at you and say, I want to ride a bike like you, Mom?
She does. She goes to the races.
And I rest my case.
Yeah, the wonderful thing in some of these events is it's like where women cycling started. You know, when I started racing and then going over to some bike racing, you know, if they would put that there would be a women's race, but there could be 1, 2, 3 women, and then they would throw us in the men's field. Or so to see this grow, you know, from a women's perspective, and I think like Matt's referring to, the next layer is, you know, getting people interested at an earlier, you know, time frame. And you ask, do parents need to be involved? They do. But a lot of parents that aren't involved in this, I mean, we, you know, my kids are involved, Matt's kids are involved, you know, different kids are involved when their parents do it. But if we could open that up in us, you know, the older, I call myself older, you know, want to help people get in it. I think that's where if other parents saw trustworthy people, coaches, et cetera, role models, and that's part of what we're trying to do is to say, hey, there's this group of us here that are willing and ready and feel the need to do this. You know, we'd love to help your daughters get involved. So, yes, they need to be aware, but do they have to be a cyclist? No.
I guess I look back at schools as a place where you start in sports as a youngster, you know, and you do things like basketball and track and baseball and soccer, and I guess hockey and some things. I'm not as familiar with those sports, and tennis and golf.
All of those have a ball except for one that you've mentioned. And
isn't that true?
They've all got a ball.
All right, swimming.
Swimming, no ball.
No ball. Well, it's true. And the bicycle is one of the things that always comes up is you have this liability issue with something that's out on the road with young kids.
The velodrome.
Then we have the velodrome.
There's no holes.
That's true.
There's no potholes.
That's
There's
true.
No traffic.
That's true.
We have, you know, weekly through the summer, the Boys and Girls Club comes to the Cleveland Velodrome, and we teach them how to ride. We've had lots of kids programs, and that's one of the reasons, or that another reason I got involved with VeloFem Litzler is that, you know, it's a way to have successful women cycling role models transfer that knowledge and passion and desire to younger female cyclists. And we can do that at the track pretty easily.
Okay. On that note, we are going to wrap it up. I want to thank Jane, Laura, Sally, and Matt for coming. Well, everybody but Sally is in studio. Sally is at home on the phone. I hope we see a lot of VeloFem on podium this year. That would be awesome.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming out on this incredibly cold, miserable day. And good luck this spring. Thanks.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you, Diane.
Thanks, Diane. Thanks, Diane.
All right. Bye-bye, Sally.
Bye-bye.
I thought that was pretty interesting.
Everyone seems to think that when you get a team, you just put it together and go ahead and let's go race. It doesn't quite work that easy, does it?
No, I don't think it does. And I appreciate them coming in from all parts of the city today. We're going to take a real quick break. We'll be right back on the Outspoken Cyclist. We're going to talk again a little bit about Radiothon.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU, University Heights.
We'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Dodd Camera, for their support of the Outspoken Cyclist. There is a close relationship between cycling and photography, and we're proud to have this family-owned business as a partner in our show. If you're in the market for photo equipment, want to learn more about taking great pictures, or maybe you're ready to launch your own YouTube channel, visit DoddCamera.com and see what Dodd Camera can do for you.
We are back on the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Lees.
And I'm Tim McKenna.
And first, I want to remind you that Radiothon is still going on. You can log on to WJCU.org and pledge your support for the show. This is the last opportunity. Well, we'll give you one more right at the end of the show. But this is the last day we're going to be talking about this. The pledge site will be open until Wednesday, February 18th at noon, when they're going to shut it down and count the pledges and see if we've met our goal, which is a pretty hefty goal. We came within $1,000 of it last year, so we'll see how we do this year. So far, we're running, I guess, fairly even, but your pledge can help put us over the top. So now we're going to do some news. What you got, Mr. Tim?
I know we've got some people that are tired of hearing about doping and cycling.
Oh, like everybody.
But we're going to talk doping sort of a little bit of a different type in cycling, and this dope is Barry Bonds.
Because he's not really a cyclist?
No.
Nobody's a dope?
He rides a bike, but he's a doper, so...
Yes, that's true.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, okay. Has he been convicted of anything?
No.
Okay, then we cannot say he's a doper. We can say he's been... doper.
Alleged.
Okay.
Accused.
Okay.
Barry Bonds just spent $20,000 on one of the rarest bikes in the world.
Seriously?
Seriously.
Is it custom?
It's one of 250. This is inspired by the Formula One leader McLaren and made in collaboration with the Specialized of Morgan Hill Company.
Well, that's Specialized.
Right.
Right.
Carbon fiber. It's a really cool looking bike.
What color is it?
It's black and gold.
Yeah, of course.
Orangish.
Okay, that makes sense. It's a McLaren.
Yes, it's a McLaren.
Okay.
Business Insider, search for Barry Bonds. It's got all the neat updates on the bike and how they went through building it and everything else. And the fact that Barry Bonds has it and paid $20,000 for it is what brought my eye to it. But it is a really cool looking bike.
A hot bike.
Yes.
Okay. So we did talk about Chris Horner not being picked up last week, right?
Yes.
All right. It came down to his age. Velo News, Andrew Hood said that age was the deciding factor in Chris Horner's future with Lampre Merida, despite a bumpy 2014 campaign with the Italian team that included a heavy crash and his untimely departure from the Vuelta a España. It was Horner's birth certificate that ultimately proved his undoing with the World Tour team. Speaking to Velo News, Lampre General Manager Brent Copeland confirmed that there was no consensus within the team to keep the 43-year-old on board for another season. The main reason came down to his age, Copeland told Velo News by telephone. It was difficult to convince everyone within the team to keep him. There are only places for 25 riders on the team, and it's not always easy to keep everyone happy. It's unfortunate because Chris is a fantastic rider and person, but his age was the deciding factor. Horner will turn 44 in October. His age became a stumbling block as he tried to negotiate a contract extension with Lampre, and unable to extend with the Italian squad, Horner found other doors closed in Europe and later signed on with the Continental Team Airgas Safeway for the 2015 season. So we'll have to watch and see. Somehow I believe that as the doping begins to dissipate, the hardworking, longer-toothed riders might just do well because they have endurance as they get older and strength. I don't know. And I think endurance and strength are really important with this sport. But we'll see. 44 is getting up there, I would say.
Well, I think if you're 54, that's not getting up there yet. But at 24, I can see where they might say that. But I think the other important thing is they have all the experience that is so necessary in bike racing anymore. And that's not something that's easy to pass on.
Right on.
A common complaint about cyclists who use bike lanes as they must have been designed by people who don't ride bikes.
Just like parking lots, in my opinion.
Lamppost, signs, and cars often found in the middle of cycling lanes, with one London cyclist receiving a $50 fine, a 50-pound fine, for swerving to avoid a phone box. Well, it got a little bit crazy, so there was a cyclist named James in Belgium who made a video. Now, cyclingweekly.co.uk, it's a 2-minute and 30-second video. It's a really cool video that shows all of the silly things that we have to run into. And he went a little overboard with some of the things. But hopefully, this is something that we can learn from as we see more and more biking infrastructure throughout the world.
Yeah, infrastructure is going to be a big part of the conversation in legislature soon. We're going to get Chuck Marone back on the show to talk about his Strong Towns concept. He's, you know, in a little hot water in Minnesota because they basically want to kick him out of his profession because he's saying we need fewer streets. Okay, we don't talk much about the lack of diversity in the sport of cycling, but I believe it's there. Rails to Trails published an interesting blog entry titled "Yes, Black Women Bike" from February 3rd. It was by Katie Harris. It was a simple exclamation from a girl, young girl, that set Veronica Davis's wheels in motion to found one of the District of Columbia's most vibrant female bike clubs. As she rode through her southeast Washington, D.C. neighborhood on a summer afternoon in 2011, she watched this girl tug at her mother's sleeve and yell, "Look, Mommy, look at that black lady on a bike." Pretty interesting, huh?
Yeah.
Davis tweeted about the experience and on a whim created the hashtag Black Women Bike. The somewhat joking hashtag opened up a dialogue, first on social media channels, then in real life, with other black women in the D.C. region. Davis found that many of them were having similar experiences. It was time, and they were ready, she says, to bust the myth that black women don't bike. And in 2011, Davis and two other women with whom she'd been dialoguing, and I'm not sure if I'm going to say this woman's name right, it's Nisi, N-S-E, Ufot and Najima Washington founded Black Women Bike DC. In 2013, the organization became a sponsored project of WABA, which is the Washington Area Bicyclists Association, huge group of cyclists down there. Davis says the group immediately filled a niche in the city with a vision of encouraging bike riding for fun, health and wellness, and transportation. The group is different from most other biking groups, which focus largely on recreation. We give women the tools they need to use a bike in any way they want, Davis explains. And it goes on to explain more, but I'll tell you what, I thought it was a really interesting article. So that's Katie Harris. It's on the railstotrails.org site.
You can also find them on Twitter. They do a nice job with updates and information there.
Nice.
That we get to see fun things all the time.
Next.
Well, I've got one and a half next things. And one is, and I had showed you this picture before, of this lady riding a bicycle in a fur coat.
Yes, nothing wrong with that.
No, but she's got the kid on the seat behind her, sound asleep, head flopped back all over, and in the basket on the front, she's got a white little poodle. When I think cyclist, I don't think that at all or anything, but I think maybe that's my, you know, that's my
correct.
Issue.
But, that's your issue.
You can find that. We tweeted that out at one point in time this week, so you can find it there. Pee-wee's Big Adventure is back in the news for the good. There's a theater that has decided that they're going to go ahead and use Pee-wee's Big Adventure to help promote cycling. They're going to have a free night on Saturday, February 21st.
All right. You got something else?
We can talk about Made in America, bicycles now available at Walmart.
Okay. You don't have to do all that much to actually be able to say Made in America. But so go ahead. I want to hear what they're saying is going to be Made in America.
Bicycle Corporation of America, or BCA,
right?
Which is a unit of Kent International Incorporated,
which is a Taiwanese company.
Okay. Announced this week that its bicycles, which are proudly assembled in the U.S., are available for purchase in stores at various Walmart locations nationwide and even through their website. So what they're saying is this is actually the first time in 15 years that we've had bicycles that are assembled in the United States being sold in Walmart across the United States.
So the key to that is that it's all about tariffs and how the tariff system works. You can bring the parts in, and I think they have to be brought in unpainted, maybe, and maybe they're painted here and assembled. I don't remember all of the rules because it's been many years since I knew all that stuff. But yes, they can say it was made in America if they follow certain steps, even though basically all the parts and even probably the frame and wheels were made in Taiwan. So it's assembled. I probably says assembled in USA.
It's assembled. Yeah. And the interesting thing is they quoted a recent survey by the Consumer Reports National Research Center that found that 78% of Americans would rather buy American products when given the choice.
So they're finding a way to say USA.
Right. And, okay. And I think what they're doing is they're going after a market that obviously this is not a market that's going to go into a bike shop and buy anything or buy anything else.
No.
But if we can put some more Americans to work and we can
put some more Americans on bikes.
Yep. At a great price point, then that's a good thing.
Okay. So, Mr. Twitter.
Yes.
Hashtag Rohantastic.
Yes.
Okay. As BMC's Rohan Dennis breaks the hour record this week or last week, my question is about the standards used to break these records. So, as you said last week, Tim, not every track is the same. And the original way the event was staged, this one-hour record attempt, was that you had to go to one specific track, and I thought it was in Switzerland, and if you wanted to attempt the record, it had to be there. Now we're doing it in tracks everywhere. And so I'm not sure how accurate it is to say this guy broke the record because this guy did it, you know, at this pace on this track, but it's not the same track. It's not the same. You know, we even talked about, I think, barometric pressure last week and what was going on because the down under track, they were worried about something about the atmosphere there.
Right.
Right.
One of the things that they looked at was depending on where the pressure was, they may have canceled the attempt.
Right.
And the other issue is one of the next hour attempts coming up is going to be in Mexico City.
Which is way high up, right?
Yes. So the air is going to be thinner. So what are the effects on the bike
and the body.
And this? And if you can train and your body can get what it needs in order to do that at that high level, at that altitude, I think it needs to be done at one spot.
It needs a little more sort of regulation, but not to take anything away from Rohan Dennis. Congratulations. He did break the record and we'll see who's next.
Yep.
Okay. We got time maybe for one more.
I like scrolling through those Kickstarter type campaigns.
Yes.
And I came across one that in the past we found some really interesting ones that are going to support a team or going to support a product that makes things easier or lights or tracking. This one was interesting to me, and I'm not sure how I feel about it. I'd love to see what you think. It's called Leaf X Pro. It's designed with aerodynamics and ergonomics in mind, providing you solid cover for those stormy days. So it's a raincoat type, clear fairing type device that you strap onto the bike, and it comes up over the top of your head, and then it actually goes down behind you and goes back to your seat.
It's like one of those clear umbrellas.
Yeah, it's like a clear umbrella, but I'm thinking of all the times with all the rainy and crappy and all the other stuff. This is one that I'm not sure that I would get on board with or see a lot of people using.
Either get a bike that is fully fared, you know, like a recumbent that's got a fairing, or dress appropriately, put fenders on your bike, and just suck it up.
And most of the pictures that they show an average rider, you know, out for a nice leisurely pace. I don't think they're going to take the time and effort to bolt all of this on and it's raining. I'm going to stay inside and watch TV.
Exactly. Or if you're a hardcore cyclist, you know how to handle it.
Right. You're going to go do the ride. So
on that note, I want to remind you once again that you still have time to log on to WJCU.org and make your pledge to Radiothon, or for the next few minutes, you can call us at 216-397-4438, and one of us will take your generous pledge right here in studio. We are going to take a very quick break. We'll be right back, and we'll head on out to the West Coast and talk to Lee Donovan. Hi, Lee. Welcome back to The Outspoken Cyclist. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Diane, for having me.
It's my pleasure. I wanted to see how your women's clinics went at Rays Mountain Bike Park last weekend when you were here in Northeast Ohio.
They were amazing. We unfortunately hit it at a little bit of a tough time with weather. We had had quite a bit of bad weather in Cleveland the days leading up to the event. So we did have we had about 20% of the women cancel, which was a bit of a bummer. But, you know, still overall, the weekend was incredible. Our numbers were up from last year for the event. And just even over the numbers, it was just the camaraderie and the enthusiasm of the attendees was huge.
Did the women only come from Ohio?
No. So this year we saw about, we actually saw 211 paid women come to the park over the weekend. And then there were many other women that actually are season pass holders that come and ride. So I would say you were seeing about 250 women there this weekend.
Wow.
Or this past weekend. And you know, we see women riders from Ontario, all along the East Coast, North Carolina, New York, Maryland. And then, you know, obviously a strong contingency from the Midwest, Chicago. We see a lot of people from not just Ohio.
That's interesting because Ray's obviously is a unique sort of setting for as an indoor mountain bike park. And so women actually come in, which means it's going to bring some monetary benefit to the Northeast Ohio area, which I didn't even think about till right this second.
Yeah, you know, it's not even just the monetary aspect of it, but, you know, I'm in Southern California. And I, you know, we have the opportunity to ride our bikes every day, but we do not have a park quite like Rays. And what Rays is doing is also building an amazing community of cyclists because it's a very skills-based environment. And so the more you ride there, the better your skills get at mountain biking or BMX. There's many BMX riders there. And so it's interesting. I can't just go to a park here and watch kids doing backflips into foam pits or jumping big, huge jumps because that's just not available to us. But at Rays, it is. And so the amount of riders that are getting that exposure, I mean, the future for the Midwest BMX riders and mountain bikers is, I mean, we're going to have some strong, amazing, skilled riders out there.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing. Which brings me to my next question. You say BMX and you say mountain biking. What was the age range? Did you have any young riders this past weekend? And what was the eldest rider you had?
Yeah, so interesting enough, I worked in the beginner room for a lot of the riders that had never been to the park that this weekend. And I had a rider that was 4 years old. And I had a rider that was 61 years old.
Wow, that's awesome.
A pretty big spread there.
That's really exciting. Really exciting. So wait a minute, beginner's room. So how many different sort of activities were there over the weekend? And who else was teaching there with you?
So myself, and then I bring in 12 coaches along with, you know, Ray's is wonderful to us. And they allow us to, they allow me to kind of create this amazing event. And so we had 13 coaches. And Rays has a plethora of rooms there. They have 3 rooms dedicated to beginner riders. And then they have a big room dedicated to like a sport rider. They have a cross country trail. They have a pump track. They had, I mean, I'm going to say they have about 9 rooms dedicated to all different types of biking.
So was Rays open to the general public last weekend, or was it strictly your clinics?
On Friday, it was strictly just women.
Nice.
So they close the park just for women, and they do that every year on the Friday, and they open at like 5 o'clock. So the guys can come in and start riding at 5. Our event's over at 5 o'clock. And that's, you know, the park can be intimidating for a lot of women. And so it gives them the opportunity to come in, experience the park without the stress of a lot of other people and get the coaching they need to get through some of the sections. And after a day, you know, the weekend is open to everyone. And I have to say, it's kind of fun. It's like the women take over the park. And so a typical weekend would be, you know, 80% men, 20% women. On the women's weekend, it's 80% women, 20% men. It's pretty cool.
That is cool. I want to remind our listeners, we're speaking with Lee Donovan. She is back out in California where it's warm and sunny, while we're back here where it's sunny and freezing, like way below freezing. But we're talking about her mountain bike clinics at Rays Mountain Bike Park last week here in Cleveland. And then you're going to be heading out to Milwaukee to do the same thing in March. How many clinics are you doing a year, not necessarily indoor, but overall?
I do host the two women's weekends at Rays, the one in February and one in March. That's the Milwaukee Park. And then I do three outdoors. I do one in Monterey in April. I host a more exclusive retreat in Mammoth Mountain, California in July. And then in August, I host a four-day skills event in Whistler, British Columbia.
Wow. You have a lot of fun.
You know what? I have to say, I am very lucky. And I know how lucky I am because I owned a retail business for 10 years. And that was very stressful. And so I know how blessed I am.
Yes, you are. I was in retail for like four times that. And I'll tell you what, I am happy to have turned that key for the last time a couple of years ago. So I want to talk a little bit about your history as a mountain bicyclist. And I mean, you have a gazillion awards, medals. You were inducted into both the BMX and Mountain Bike Hall of Fame. Tell us a little bit about how you chose mountain biking over, say, track or road or anything else. What you actually made a comment that the first time you did a mountain bike ride, it took you to Serenity, a place with which you were not familiar. And so how did that experience sort of shape the rest of this career that you've put in front of you?
Well, for me, on the first ride, I was actually riding in the local mountains near my house. Some of my friends took me on the ride. It was very hard. And I remember when we got to the top, we sat on this rock. And I'm very hyper. And sitting is just not something I do. So and this is many, many, many moons ago. And I remember just sitting on that rock and being so relaxed. And going, God, this is so serene. And I really thought, I want more of this. This is something I need. And that was just cross-country mountain biking. And so I had the opportunity to do that for a few years. Not that I was doing it every weekend or every week. But then all of a sudden, I got invited to Mammoth Mountain, California in the summer of 1992. And I did this thing called downhill. I always thought it was cross country. You know, you climb up to the top of the hill. And then the downhill, I thought, oh my gosh, they take you to the top of the hill and then you get to ride down. I said, that is the coolest thing ever.
Really?
And that's where I got the bug for mountain biking. I didn't really have the bug until I rode at Mammoth. I mean, I love mountain biking and I love that feeling of serenity, but I never had that opportunity to feel that exhilaration that I had from downhill mountain biking. And that's where it stuck for me, was in 1992.
And that's a lot of what you teach these women, those skills to be able to go down a hill, to be able to go across logs and that kind of stuff that I think men are intimidated at first. Although men seem to be ballsier. They're willing to fall down a lot and get hurt and get up and get back on their bike. Women are not so willing to do that all the time.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? It's just, I have women I work with that I go, God, I wish I had that courage that you have, because I have women that aren't good enough that they will try anything. And so I think our general consensus, and we've had this discussion before when I was on the show before, people make women, we have this image that women are weak and they're fearful. And, you know, I don't personally have that experience. I come across a lot of women that probably have what we would call more balls than most men. But the thing is that, you know, if you don't make it, if you don't have the skill to make it, you get injured. And so then you're constantly on the recovery process. And so kind of what I teach is I give you all the knowledge on how to be more safe on your bike. And it gives you the confidence now that you know what you're doing. So you're not going, oh, is this right or is that right? You know exactly, you go, yes. You know, like for myself, I'm a certified mountain bike coach. I've gone through the process of learning, you know, what I need to teach in order for the safety aspect of mountain biking. And that's really important. So when people come and they work at our clinics, like at a Rays, they're being taught safety aspects on how to ride their bike, and not just downhill skills. I mean, I focus a lot on like just restarting on a steep hill. A lot of people can't do that on shifting. A lot of people aren't really shifting experts on their bike. And that can even apply to riding on the road. You know, it's just, it's there's a lot of skills that you work on with people, and I'm more like a personal trainer. If I work with you personally, you will get a lot of personal attention, and instantly those changes will be happening on the fly.
Well, and that's an interesting point, that the skills you might learn at your clinic indoors or even at Whistler or wherever, you can take out into the world. You don't actually have to always be riding a mountain bike. I know a lot of people who do not have good handling skills with road bikes, you know, can't hold a line, whatever it is, that would be helpful just to do one of your clinics to get back on the road.
Absolutely. I mean, I ride road, you know, a little bit here and there. And sometimes I get out and I'm fearful because I see how much weight people are riding on the handlebar of their road bike, and their body position is awful.
Right.
And I'm just thinking, God, it's so dangerous the way you're riding your road bike right now. And when you even just do a mountain bike clinic, it shows you how to kind of get off of the weight a little bit. So, you know, my whole thing is, what I teach a lot is that we are like our suspension of our vehicles. The goal is to always have 50-50 balance. So 50% weight on the front end and 50% weight on the back end. And that's the goal. You know, we don't want to have too much weight on the front of our bike or too much weight on the back. And so our body moves back and forth, side to side, to always maintain that balance. And even on the road, that is a significant, that's significantly important to know that. And when you have 60 or 70% weight, when you're waiting on the handlebar all the time, your rear end has no traction. So if you need to slow down or anything, that it could get dangerous.
Yes, it can. And people who ride in their aero bars on the road, I stay away from them. They're just not trustworthy on the road. I just don't feel like they have control of their bikes.
Well, sometimes, you know, we have one goal in mind, and we don't make safety our first goal. And so, you know, I used to ride road a ton when I raced mountain bikes. I mean, I spent 80% of my training on my road bike. That's crazy, isn't that? I was a downhiller, and I spent 80% of my training on a road bike.
Yeah, but you must have had a reason for it.
Yeah, I mean, I did. You have to have high leg speed, great power for downhilling, and, you know, skills it's very important. But if you already have the skills, then those other areas need to be more integrated into the training. So those things were more integrated in my training. And so often I would see how people would be in a line, you know, we'd ride in pace line a lot or whatever, and they just weren't even paying attention to the safety aspect. Oh, there's a car coming on the right. You know, those are things that are so important when you're on the road. And I don't do road training. I don't do road clinics. But those are things that I would definitely hint upon if I was out on the road with my mountain bike. I would make sure that I said, okay, and we're on the road here. Make sure you're very, very aware of where these cars are going.
Yeah, a lot of people are being hit these days. That's a whole different subject, which I definitely do not want to get into today. We talk weight. Well, and there's way too much of it going on. So let me ask you a question. You have a 10-year-old now, yes?
Almost. She'll turn 10 this year. She's 9 right now.
Is she interested in mountain biking?
You know, she's a good mountain biker. And she's really more my, I call her my music and theater daughter. So she's really into music and theater. She loves to dance and sing. She's a little performer.
Yeah, I had one of those too. She's an adult now, but we used to call her the Sarah Bernhardt.
Yeah, we just went to New York City over New Year's, and we went and saw Wicked and Matilda, and we went and saw the Nutcracker.
Oh, she must have loved that.
And it definitely left a huge impression on her, for sure.
That's great. That is just great. The last thing I want to talk about is you are going back to Raise in Milwaukee next month. Are there still openings for women who might want to come to the weekend?
There's definitely room. You would want to go to the Raise MTV.com website. You can just type in Raise Milwaukee or Raise Mountain Bike Park in the Google search, and it would come up, and then they have events, and you'd go to the women's event. If any of your listeners are, you know, out there listening, it's, you know, this is an opportunity. It's so easy if we have fear in our life, it's so easy for us to say, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. But this is one of those opportunities where you can come totally at your own pace. You have amazing coaches. I mean, I bring in some of the best technical coaches in the country. And so you don't have women pushing you saying, oh, you can do it. These are women that are there to help provide you the confidence and the knowledge to take that next step. And you get a whole day of riding at the park. You get breakfast and lunch provided to you. We have amazing raffles. I mean, somebody last weekend, we gave away three bikes. Trek gave away a bike, and Electra gave out two bikes. I mean,
wow.
And that was just those three. Those were like our grand prizes. We had 14 other raffle prizes that came from Trailie Designs and Camelback and Fox. And we had a Saran. I mean, we had a number of prizes that came from amazing sponsors of the park as well. So you can't beat it. And in Milwaukee, it's so fun. If you get a chance to go there for the weekend, they have a great little downtown area. We have so much fun there.
Wow.
And, you know, Trek owns the parks. I don't know if you're familiar with that. And they have just done such a great job with supporting women there. And I think it's funny because I actually work with Giant Bicycles. I work for the women's division, Lynn Cycling. And I think it's so cool that we're still able to maintain such a wonderful relationship, you know. And that's what's great about bikes. You know, people aren't just like, oh, well, we only sponsor this person, so that's going to be the person that's working with our event. You know, we're kind of a cohesive industry where it seems like everyone just supports everyone for better biking, and I think it's wonderful.
Well, that has changed, and I like that that's the direction it's been going and that it is going. So people can find out more about you and your work at ichoosebikes.com.
Yep.
And what a clever website. So it took me all this time to go and see, wait, what are those little squares? The L, the E, the I, the G, and the H. I'm like, oh, really, Diane? How slow are you? But I encourage you, if you want to know what I'm talking about, go see ichoosebikes.com. It's very clever. It's a beautiful website. Well, it's really been fun talking with you again. I'm sorry I didn't get down to see you, but I know you were so busy. In fact, you couldn't talk to me really much last weekend because you had no voice.
Yes, I am a talker, so I tend to lose my voice pretty easily. But we missed you, and I do hope that next year it'll be in February again in Cleveland. And I do hope that next year you'll be able to come down and have some fun with us.
I would love to do that. Lee, thank you so much. Have a great time at Raise in Milwaukee next month, and we'll talk again.
Thank you so much, Diane.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Lee Donovan joined me from her home in California talking about mountain biking and Raise Mountain Bike Park right here in Cleveland. She's such a delightful person. I want to remind you one more time, Radiothon. It's now. It's going to be over next Wednesday. Please log on to WJCU.org. Pledge your support for our show, for the station, and for Cycling Radio. Thanks so much again for listening. Have a great weekend. If it is warm and it is dry, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next week at this same time with more conversation and news from the world of cycling. If you missed any part of today's show, download the podcast from iTunes or WJCU.org. And you can follow The Outspoken Cyclist on Facebook and Twitter to keep the conversation going throughout the week. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.